Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we are discussing 2022 predictions, no more medical bill surprises, and mandatory vacations.
Yeah, not only is it 2022, like you said, and we're going to get to those predictions here in a little bit, but let's talk about another number, 25. Dude, earlier this month, we want to share with listeners, we hit 25 million downloads. That's such a massive number, dude. Like, I don't think we even had 25,000 downloads after our first year. I haven't done the math on that, but that's probably accurate. We definitely had 25. we definitely had 25 people who are listening to the show early on. But that's just one of those massive numbers that I would not have expected that we would have been able to have hit. But here we are.
Here we are. Yeah. And honestly, I mean, I think mostly it's due to your incredible podcasting.
Thank you.
Yeah, your abilities on the microphone. But really, honestly, what it comes down to is the How to Money listeners, man, and how they continue to come back every week and listen and support the show. And so, yeah, really, I'm excited. It's a really kind of a fun number to hit. And just big thanks to everybody out there who continues to listen and support what we're up to. And hopefully we can, get 25 million more here in a few years.
It'll be 50 before you know it. Seriously, yeah, this is a testament to the fact that so many folks out there are listening to our show.
Yep. Right?
Like, think about this. 25 million times, you could have heard you saying, "Welcome to Out of Money."
People might actually just skip that part and get on to the other stuff. I don't know.
But it truly is. I mean, and there are a lot of folks who have listened to the show. I mean, who started back in the days when we called the show Poor Not Poor. That's what we used to call the podcast. It wasn't How to Money. It used to be called Poor Not Poor.
Yeah, for like the first 9 months, basically, right?
As in pour yourself a craft beer while at the same time you don't want to be poor down the road.
Yep.
But we found that was difficult to explain, just like it is a little bit tricky right now for me to even talk about. But the fact is, yeah, we're going to keep podcasting. We're going to keep talking about personal finances because we want to help folks on their journey towards financial freedom.
Yeah, I think that's the thing to note is it's not just that this milestone, $25 million. Those are individual people listening to episodes in order to get their personal finances straight. And I think that number is reflective of a certain amount of change that's happened in a bunch of people's lives. Mm-hmm. And that's what's exciting.
Yeah.
It's not because like we're freaking awesome and it's nothing like that. It's truly just, you know what? People are listening and they're doing something different because of it. And that is cool.
Absolutely. Yeah. Someone messaged us recently on Instagram and he only recently found our show and he started way back at the beginning. He's working his way through. I think he's like around 30 or, episode 30 or 35.
Poor guy.
But he said, early on back then, at some point, we were talking about dropping the big banks. And that's one of the things that he has done at the beginning of this year is he was with Wells. He's with one of the big banks and he has cut them loose from his life. He's making awesome changes to his life. And that's what it's all about, making those changes, making that progress in your own personal life.
Exactly. All right. Well, enough about that. But
yes.
Thanks again to everybody for your continued support. And Matt, since it's the first Friday flight of the new year, we'll mention exactly what it is for newer listeners.
Sure.
Basically, we take money stories from around the web and we dissect how they pertain to your personal finances. And we've got some good ones already to cover in the new year.
They're always a little bit more timely, right?
Yes.
And so oftentimes it's small little changes that have occurred within, these different bigger topics that we've talked about before, but they're typically a little more newsworthy, which is why we covered them on our Friday flight. And the reason we call it a flight is, again, going back to the craft beer analogy, you go to a brewery, you get a flight, and it's a small sampling of little beers. If you're looking for some variety, that way you can get a feel for what this brewery has to offer. That's what we're trying to do with the news.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it doesn't have to do with airplanes.
So let's get to it. Let's talk about resolutions for a second. And I saw this stat this week that something like 90%+, I think 92% of folks are going to fail at their New Year's resolutions. And I have a feeling some of our listeners, some people out there, a lot of people out there probably have already stumbled. Mm-hmm. I know my wife was trying to get up for the first workout of the year on Tuesday. She missed it. But you know what? She got back on the horse on Thursday.
Oh,
so,
don't get me.
Yes.
You're throwing her under the bus. No, but she early saying, on in the year, aren't you?
That's the thing, is you have to push through even when you screw up. I think that's an important part of it, right? So if you have already stumbled out of the gate, that doesn't mean it's over for you and you should throw in the towel altogether. That's kind of one of the things I want to convey.
Good for her.
Yeah. And again, I think that the money challenges, Matt, that we talked about on Wednesday's episode,
yeah,
that can be the perfect aid for you to get started off on the right foot. And sometimes it's fear that's standing in the way of somebody accomplishing some of the goals that they want to accomplish. They're like, I don't have the information. I don't know what I'm doing. And, you know, I think there's this belief that we can't accomplish something because of that. Or in half the battle, I would say, is learning more about what you're afraid of, finding experts who can help you. That's what we want to be in this new year for everybody out there. But at the same time, a money challenge can help you get the ball rolling. And so if you have yet to sign up for one of those How to Money challenges, we will include the sign up link in today's show notes on the website as well.
Yes.
And we're going to send out the first email later today to everybody who signed up for one of these money challenges. Matt has painstakingly created these beautiful PDFs for people so that you can track your progress.
I don't know how beautiful I would say they actually are.
They look nice.
They work.
Yeah.
And I'm actually really excited. I'm personally definitely going to participate in the Sell Your Stuff Challenge.
That's the one I'm going to do,
are
too.
You? Yeah. And because, I mean, I'd already been selling some stuff on eBay kind of haphazardly, but I want to make it a little more systematic, and maybe we'll share some of the different things that you and I are going to sell. Actually, we'll probably talk about that at the beginning of a few episodes.
Yeah.
Here in the
coming
weeks.
Here's what I got rid of this week. Yeah. No,
exactly.
But, and we've created four different money challenges. Please go take a look, and hopefully you'll sign up for one and you'll find it helpful to jumpstart your personal finance goals for this year.
That's right. And, you know, I think one of the things, one of the keys this time of year is to recognize that changes that we're trying to implement in our lives, it takes a couple things. I think it takes time and it takes discipline. And we mention this because we want folks to remember that any goal or resolution worth achieving is not going to happen overnight. But oftentimes we underestimate the reality of how long it's going to take to get where we're wanting to go. And we get discouraged because of it. You know, becoming an overnight success, like, that sounds great. We all want that. Yeah. We want to hit financial independence. We want to land the job, the new position of our dreams, just at the snap of our fingers. But it takes seasoning. It takes time. It takes effort to get there. Again, you know, those money challenges are a great start, but completing one of those, or even just getting started with one of those, isn't going to get you to your ultimate destination. It's just one of the disciplines along the way. And instead, it's going to take years and oftentimes even decades to achieve your ultimate financial goals. But these small steps that you start taking now will pay off in a big way for future you down the road.
That's right.
And Joel, you even talked about fear a little bit, right? Like, it's the fear of the unknown. And part of why we talk about these different topics is not only for folks to understand the nuts and bolts and the how-to elements of how-to money, but just the familiarity with it, right?
Yeah.
Like, we talk about how people don't talk about money. And so the fact that we're talking about it, we want it to be something that you're more comfortable with. And just hearing two dudes talk about something that you can easily do, hopefully will give you some of the boldness to start doing that in your own life.
Exactly. The more you hear people conversing about it, the more you feel comfortable doing it yourself. And that is part of the mission of what we do. All right, let's talk about some interesting stats that came along at the very end of last year that are worth sharing. I think there are some lessons that maybe we can extrapolate from some of the stuff that we started to learn at the very end of 2021. And for instance, the Wall Street Journal reported about IPOs setting a record in 2021.
IPOs and SPACs.
Yes. Yeah. they were raising more money than ever before. An IPO, if you don't know what that means, it stands for initial public offering. It's when a company gets publicly listed, and then everyday investors like you and me, we have the ability to buy shares of that company. And a big example, I don't know, the one that maybe I was most interested in, at least, I did not buy any, but I was looking at, was Rivian, the electric car maker, partly because their trucks look amazing.
Yeah.
And also they're launching a facility right down the road, like 45 minutes from us.
Yes.
So
I mean, it's their second location, right?
Yep.
I mean, the only factor that they have is somewhere in Illinois. And so their second location, it's very close to where we live. We are going to be very bullish on Rivian, just their overall success. That doesn't mean that we would recommend for you to buy Rivian stock.
Yes.
We don't own Rivian stock, at least not yet. And if we do, it's only going to be a very, very small amount of money that we would be comfortable with losing.
Exactly. And that gets directly to the point I wanted to make with that statistic about IPOs. Like, Rivian made that splash debut towards the end of last year. Mm-hmm. And the stock actually is still trading above the price that it debuted at, which is good for anybody who's put their money there.
Good for them.
But at the same time, 2/3 of those anticipated debuts are now underwater. Take another popular one, for instance, Robin Hood.
That's, yeah.
everybody knows what Robin Hood is. And their IPO was highly anticipated as well. Things went well for a minute, for a couple days. But now the value of that stock has been cut in half from when it launched. And so I guess what does this tell us if 2/3 of 66% of these companies now are now worth less than they were on day one? Well, single stock investing is rife with potholes, and there's even more volatility when it's a brand new IPO. That's just there are probably going to be more and more IPOs this year. And so it's exciting to think, oh, this company, I can now, you know, invest in it. But it doesn't mean that you should.
Exactly. It's interesting, especially when you have a company like Rivian and they're opening a factory, or, you know, they're locating near where you live. It's going to affect our lives in certain ways, but it shouldn't affect how you invest your retirement dollars. By the way, we actually received a listener email this week about single stock investing, and he shared that he totally disagrees with us. we plan to answer some of his concerns and give some in-depth thoughts on index funds versus individual stocks soon. So hopefully you can keep an eye out for that. But something else worth reporting on our first Friday Flight of January is that almost everyone is now richer than they were this time of year last year.
That's for celebrating, I guess.
Yeah. The combined net worth of Americans has soared from $100 trillion to $137 trillion. And much of that in thanks to the stock market's incredible hot year, plus all that stimmy money. And while inequality still remains a real issue, obviously, the bottom half of Americans have seen their wealth grow immensely this past year, too. In fact, data from the Federal Reserve shows that the bottom 50th percentile saw the largest gains in their overall wealth. They experienced a nearly 85% increase over the past couple of years, from Q3 2019 to Q3 2021, an increase of 85% of their net worth. That's incredible.
That is incredible. Yeah, and I think sometimes the headlines continue to refer to, and it's not that the overall wealth certainly has grown in a much bigger way for the top tier of wealth holders in the United States, but the greatest percentage of growth has been at the bottom, and that is, I think, a good thing.
That's awesome.
Yeah. All right, Matt, you mentioned the meteoric rise of the market, so I guess I want to ask you, should we offer up our predictions for 2022 and where we think the market's going to go?
Sure, let's do it.
No, that's not what we do here.
Buy Rivian.
No, the answer to that is no.
Just kidding, don't do it.
But yeah, the thing is, like, when it comes to predictions, we kind of put that in the title of the episode. We wanted to talk about some other predictions that other people have made this year, but we're not necessarily going to offer up our own because we don't think we have a clue, and we're actually pretty sure that most of the people offering some of these predictions don't have a clue either. There's a lot of guessing going on out there in the world of finance, and we've not been afraid to give some of those people grief over the years for some of their predictions. But here's what we will say. The one prediction that we do have is to not underestimate the U.S. economy. And there was this article, Matt, in Barron's this past week. And what I was talking about was the bearish sentiment that some people have just through years and years of good times. And they highlighted, which I think is a great thing to remember, that businesses, they've grown, they've thrived even through times like the Great Depression, through world wars, through pandemics. And it's not that there haven't been downturns, recessions, and meaningful volatility during events like those, during hard events like those. But here's what we would say. We would say don't pay attention to folks out there who are predicting the end of the world or they're predicting a market collapse, because that's sort of fear mongering. That uncertainty, that doubt is going to keep you from investing.
All that FUD. Like, that's an actual acronym.
Oh, really?
The practice of causing there to be a lot of fear, uncertainty, and doubt in people.
Yeah. And I think, like, if over the past 3 or 4 or 5 years, we're hearing more and more voices like that, like the bull market can't continue. And Matt and I are making no predictions about whether it will or whether it won't.
They might be right, but they also might be wrong.
And many of them have been wrong. We talked about Robert Kiyosaki recently on the show, where he has made a prediction almost every year about a market collapse. And he has been wrong every single year. And it's one of those things where if you bought into what he was selling, you have been sitting on the sidelines and you've been missing out on the growth that the market has been experiencing.
Exactly. And actually, as a friend of the show, Ben Carlson, he put it recently that progress is in our DNA, which is so true. not investing because the stock market naysayers have made you think twice is really just betting against American ingenuity. And that has historically been a pretty bad idea. Another quote that sticks with me is one from another previous guest, Morgan Housel. And he says that you should save like a pessimist and invest like an optimist. Really, we don't think there is any simpler way to put it.
Yeah, still one of my all-time favorite money quotes. And I'm thinking about getting it tattooed on my bicep or something.
It's so wise, right? Because as an individual in our own personal lives, we need to basically be incredibly, I don't want to say be overly conservative, but we need to be a little more pessimistic.
You need money and savings, and you need to be prepared for the worst.
But when it comes to the overall market and what our economy and what the world is going to do, we need to be optimistic. That is the approach that you want to take when it comes to investing your money.
Exactly. All right, Matt, we got more to get to on this Friday flight, including some predictions about the real estate market next year. Well, we'll get to that and more right after this.
All right, we're back, and before we dive into some real estate talk, we're going to get to our ludicrous headline of the week.
Every week, we
tear apart an article that we that we come across, and not necessarily an article, but something that just makes us really just pisses us off,
or sometimes it's just like a cringy headline. You're like, that's not true, or that was poorly worded.
Right, but this one in particular, this comes from the Journal, and the headline reads: Hospitals still not fully complying with federal price disclosure rules. And there's this law that went into effect at the beginning of last year requiring hospitals to publicly post on their websites the cost of their services. But it turns out that lots of hospitals are basically doing whatever they want with no consequences. CMS, which is evidently this stands for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, they're the ones who are tasked with enforcing the rules and levying the big fines to hospitals that don't comply. But no fines were issued last year, even though that rule was in place for the entirety of 2021.
Hospitals be like, I do what I want, and nobody says anything.
Basically, yeah. Some of the hospitals even had the chutzpah to say that posting their prices would give them a competitive disadvantage, and that they don't believe that consumers would find the information useful. Dude, total BS.
Yeah, I hate prices being right and center, you know?
When is knowing the price of anything ever not been useful information for us as consumers? The CMS, they did issue a few hundred warnings, plus the penalty increases this year to as much as $2 million per hospital, and so hopefully we'll begin to see some more price transparency at our local hospitals this year. But again, I think that's just such a crappy thing for them to say that, like, oh, this isn't going to help the consumer.
Yeah. I mean, they don't want this.
Like, when it comes to any decision that we make, there is no other decision that we make, no other especially larger expense like a medical procedure, where you don't shop around.
Right.
It's just one of those industries where there is seriously lacking that transparency, and I want to see this in place. I want to see a price list, and I want to be able to shop it around.
Yeah, and those medical prices being shrouded in secrecy is not doing any good for consumers, and the fact that the hospitals are allowed to get away with not following the rules is not okay, and I hope that a few fines get levied against some major hospital players who are skirting the rules, and that all the other hospitals start shaking in their boots and they start to comply.
It doesn't even need to go up to the $2 million. Like, I think the fines start at a little over $100,000. Just start doling out a few of those $100,000 fines. Like, that will be enough. Like, I don't want them to come down hard on a hospital because it's taking a while for them to be compliant. I just want a few of those hospitals to be a good example, though, for for the rest of the industry.
They need to feel the pain so that we can feel the savings.
Ooh, I like that.
One good news, Matt, on the medical front, now that you've revealed the ludicrous headline of the week and we talked about that, there's a law that went into effect January 1st that means that we shouldn't see any more surprise emergency bills, which is a really good thing. So if you're having an emergency, basically you go to an urgent care or an emergency room, you'll still have to pay your typical copay like you normally would. But here's the thing, you're not going to be stuck with a surprise bill after the fact. And this happens so often to people where they think they're paying one price, but they got seen by a doctor who was out of network randomly that they did not ask to see, but that was provided to them, and they get stuck with a bill for thousands or tens of thousands of dollars that was not on their radar.
Right.
And so this is fantastic.
They could
news.
Have even been like unconscious. Like,
yeah.
It's like, oh, well, I didn't have choice. I'm sorry. Like,
exactly.
I didn't want that doctor to work on me. I would have been fine with the in-network doctor.
Well, and the problem is when we're getting medical care, oftentimes, we are in a state, especially if it's emergency medical care, where we can't ask those questions.
State of duress.
Yes. And so, yeah, don't get me wrong. We are all about hospitals and doctors getting paid for the services and the care they provide.
Totally.
But the onus really, it doesn't need to be, should not be on the individual and their family member to look up, especially in the heat of the moment, whether something is in network or out of network, you know, while they're in extreme pain or while they're, right, you know, in an ambulance on the way after a car accident or something like that.
Right.
And so I think that this bill, although maybe not perfectly written, is going to do a lot of good for a lot of consumers. And, you know, the fact that it is now law is great.
Yeah. Yeah. We're all about personal responsibility, you know, like shopping around, being the smartest consumer possible. But it can be difficult to perform your due diligence when you're in a dire situation like that. You know, when you have the time to shop around ahead of time for, you know, all those other non-emergency medical needs that you might have, it should be up to you to know whether you are in network or not. And lawmakers actually agree with us on this point, because you can still receive surprise bills not covered by your insurance from out-of-network providers. So when it comes to standard procedures, things that are not considered emergencies, you do need to make sure that you are in-network. But those emergency visits, those are the type of visits that you will no longer have to worry about getting billed beyond what you would typically have to pay through your insurance.
No doubt. All right, Matt, let's get to a couple real estate predictions that we saw this year from some of the big housing websites. And Zillow just shared some of their own predictions for the housing market for the coming year. And what did they see in their crystal ball as they gazed into the future? Well, they saw more growth in the housing market, although what they also saw was a market that is likely not going to be as frantic as last year's, where growth is subdued to a certain degree. And I think I agree with that. What do you think?
Yeah, I think I agree. You know, I've talked with some folks and they have indicated that, like, okay, should I be concerned? Is this a bubble? And fact is, like, we're not in a housing bubble. We have very high qualified borrowers who are taking out these mortgages, who are buying homes. This is not going to be a situation like it was, you know, like 10, 12 years ago with the housing crash that we experienced. But I agree. I think we are going to see it level off a little bit. It might even plateau. But I don't think... Man, we actually are getting a little prediction-y now, aren't we? But I don't think we're going to see prices correct. I don't think we're going to see values decrease.
Well, I agree with that. And I think, yeah, maybe we said we weren't going to get predictions. Now we kind of are. But I will say that there are...
You could be wrong.
When you look at the fundamentals of what's happening, there is nothing that jumps out at you states that home prices are going to fall off a cliff. And I think, you know, rates are set to rise this year, and I think that will happen. And I think that will mellow out price increases. But I agree with you. We're not in a bubble from everything that we can tell based on the data. And so seeing like a severe price drop in your neighborhood, it's unlikely. But yep, so much of that depends on where you live and local real estate. And one of the other things that Zillow is predicting is they're predicting more growth happening basically in the Southeast United States. And they say that, you know, multiple major cities in Florida, in Texas, and North Carolina, that's on their list of cities that are likely to experience the fastest rates of growth in the coming year. Our city of Atlanta was number 7 on that list.
Oh, nice.
But when you look at the list, man, it's like literally all in that Southeastern quadrant.
Mm-hmm. And I do not believe it.
It's the hot place to be, I guess.
Yeah, so you can join Joel and I down here in Atlanta, even though it's predicted to be a hot market. The cost of living in Atlanta is still lower, especially when you compare it to other major cities in the United States.
Yeah.
But, you know, we'll see what happens. But we know that a lot of How to Money listeners are in the market to buy a home. But it's helpful to have just these general market conditions on your radar during your home search, while also digging into those specific dynamics of what is happening in the market, the specific markets where you're attempting to buy.
And at the same time, knowing your own personal financial situation.
Oh, yeah.
Because there are a lot of people who want to buy a home but aren't ready to buy a home yet. And so if that's your goal, maybe this is the year where you're preparing your finances for that eventuality.
You're tilling that soil. You haven't yet planted those seeds.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, because it doesn't matter what the overall market is doing. It doesn't matter what the market is doing in your specific hometown if you are not ready to purchase a home yourself. Joel, let's get to our last story. Let's talk about vacation a little bit, because, you know, like, I know we made it sound like that we're not too high on New Year's resolutions earlier in the show. Really, we aren't. You and I, you didn't set a resolution?
No resolution.
I didn't either.
I don't know if that makes me lazy or smart, but...
Maybe smart, because you don't like to fail. So you're like, I'm not going to do something. Say I'm going to do something that I'm not actually going to do.
Right.
But, you know, maybe if you are the kind of person who likes to make some changes for yourself in the new year, I just, you know, semantics, call it something different. Maybe one of those things for you can be to take some more time off this coming year. Seriously, rest is a necessary component of doing great work. The New York Times, they had an article this week detailing how some employers are requiring, it's not just an option anymore, they are requiring their employees to take vacation time.
They're like, get out of here, Jim. Don't come back next week.
Literally, and so much of it depends with, you know, on your specific company or your specific boss or your most direct manager, right? Because if the company policy is you've got unlimited time off, but your supervisor isn't taking time off, well, guess what the expectation is?
Yeah.
Unless it has been explicitly stated that, no, you need to take time off.
Sometimes that unlimited PTO policy is a good thing, and sometimes it is...
It's a freaking mirage.
A trap.
It's a trap, dude. Yeah. It's just this thing that is out there, but people know that it completely depends on what is being communicated through, you know, within the company, and it depends on what is being modeled as well. But generally speaking, we think that companies requiring this time off is great. It's in the best interest of both employers and employees to make sure that they aren't neglecting to take that all-important personal time. So, yeah, start planning time off, you know, throughout the year now. And I think this is especially true considering the number of people who are now working from home. Being someone who chose to start working from home over, you know, like, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, that, for me, it took years of boundary setting. It took years of finding the right rhythm where I was able to be at home and to not feel like I was working.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's just a new dynamic that so many people, so much of the workforce has found themselves abruptly thrust into as opposed to electing to do something. And because of that, I think it can be even more difficult to feel like that they have gotten anything resembling a break.
Yes, completely agree. And I think that's very true for a lot of people. And I think if your company is a kind of company that makes it hard for you to take time off, or they don't encourage that, or maybe they actively discourage you taking time off, then you probably don't want to stick around at that company long term. You might want to start looking around. And of course, the job market is ripe for the picking right now. It could be the perfect time to look for a new job, but you want to prioritize a company that has a culture that cares about you and about getting the rest that you need in order to be able to function at a high level. Ultimately, it's better for the employee and the employer. I think we talked about that at the end of the year, Matt, when we talked about Patagonia and their company culture.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And
yeah.
Like prioritizing working for a company that has a great culture and that wants you to take time off and to recharge is a good thing.
Exactly. But that is going to be it for this Friday flight. Listeners can find show notes up on our website at howtomoney.com. Don't forget to sign up for any of those money challenges that we shared with you on this past Wednesday's episode. If you haven't listened to that one yet, give it a quick listen. You can hear us talk through some of the strategies and some of the just the practical. I mean, we talk about why it is that challenges are oftentimes necessary in our lives when we're wanting to see progress. So yeah, we'd recommend that. But we hope to see you back here on Monday. We've got a great listener questions episode lined up for you then. And Joel, until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.